Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kamma Daf Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today, we have the zchus of beginning B'siyata D'shmaya with the help of the One Above, a new Seder of the Shas, Seder Nezikin, which opens up with Maseches Bava Kamma. Maseches Bava Kamma, for the first half at least, and even some sections of the second half of the Masechta, deal with what we refer to as tort law, laws and obligations dealing with damages, obligations and responsibilities that people have with regard to supervising and watching over their articles, their possessions, even themselves, in order to prevent damage from taking place. And in the event that it does, what type of restitution is demanded? A word of note regarding our opening sugya. We'll call this a structural note as opposed to a content statement. The structural note is that the first two daf of our perek essentially is one trend of thought outside of the opening section of the Gemara, but beyond that, Daf Beis Omid Beis through Daf Gimel Omid Beis is essentially one continuous trend of thought. So that in the context of the Daf Yomi type Shiurim that we are featuring, we'll have to see how to deal with that, because oftentimes stopping or breaking a topic in midair has negative results when you want to resume the study on a subsequent point in time, on a subsequent day. This we'll have to deal with as we go along. But be that as it may, we have mentioned that you'll find one long trend of thought starting from Daf Beis Omid Beis through Daf Gimel Omid Beis. The Mishnah opens up with what we call four primary forms of damage. The term ovos that you see in this Mishnah, arba ovos nezikin, the term ovos is an expression that can have different meanings in different contexts. Simply put, we look at Rashi and he tells you that the term ovos is a reference to those forms of damage that are recorded in the scriptures. Ovos kori lahanach deksivin bekro, as you can see, bekro behedya, those that are stated explicitly in the psukim. Without any further ado, let us continue now with the Mishnah. Arba ovos nezikin, there are four primary forms of damage that are recorded in the verses. Hashor, v'habor, v'hamave, v'hever. These are words that lose a tremendous amount if you merely translate them. The Gemara, in a wondrous and elaborate fashion, explains that the words that we just read are really descriptions with many details as to what constitutes each one of these forms of damage. So the first word often is translated as the ox, and the second word a pit. The third word we cannot translate simply because it's the subject of a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. Mave, is it a reference to a person that does damage, or is it a reference to animals that do damage through eating, through their teeth? And vahever, hever is a word that we'll associate with fire. But people make the mistake. This is a very widespread mistake that people make. And I call it misrepresenting the Talmud and Talmudic law, and claim that it's irrelevant to us nowadays. After all, who has an ox? Who has a pit? These are things that applied once upon a time and are irrelevant in modern society. Maybe on a farm it has some relevance, but anyway, let me tell you, they are making a major mistake and falling victim to the bait that many antagonists and scoffers place in their way. This, we'll call editorial comment, will take on a great deal of meaning as we get into the Gemara a bit later. But let me just repeat that unfortunately, people have a tendency to want to translate, and oftentimes literal translations. This Mishnah, you will see, is a primary example of how a major disservice takes place when you do that. So the Mishnah goes on, and we have to point out that the Gemara will elaborate, will fill in a great deal of, say, meat and body into this Mishnah. So for the time being, we're going to read, and we're going to actually withhold translation simply out of, we'll say, deference to the Mishnah, to the depth of the Mishnah, as you will see in the Gemara itself. The double underline that you see is featured on the side under our Mivneh structural note, highlighting the word loy. And you'll see then a dashed underline highlighting the word kehare. Hadgoshas hashoni bein ha'ovos will be highlighting the differences, the contrasts between the ovos, the primary forms of damage mentioned in the Mishnah. Now, we say that we're going to contrast them, but you'll see that the Mishnah itself reveals very little. Once again, we'll have to wait for the Gemara to fill in the details. Let's continue in the Mishnah. Lo harei hashor kare hamave. Attributes, the characteristics of the damage referred to by the term shor are not like those characteristics that illustrate or that characterize mave. And what the Mishnah means to say is that had the Torah written just one of them, one of these forms of damage and the obligation that they entail, I wouldn't have been able to figure out the other one. Rashi also points out that the list of primary damages in the Mishnah, the Shor, Bor, Mave, Vehever, parallel the order in which they're found in the verses. So, by saying Lo harei hashor kare hamave, the Mishnah is in effect saying that had the Torah written just the case of shor, I wouldn't have been able to figure that mave also is a form of obligatory. The damage obligatory in the sense that it carries with it the obligation to pay in the case that damage takes place through mave'eh. So lo harei hashor kare hamave'eh v'lo harei hamave'eh kare hashor. Likewise, had the Torah written mave'eh, I wouldn't have been able to figure out that I'm obligated to pay to compensate in the case of damage committed by shor. V'lo ze v'zeh sheyesh bohen ruach chayim karei ha'esh she'ein bo ruach chayim. Shor and maveh are which have in them the breath of life. Because shor and maveh are damages that come as a result of living organisms. So neither not this nor that. Neither shor or maveh, which have the breath of life to them, are like esh, the fire-related damage. She'ein bo ruach chayim, the fire doesn't have is an inanimate; it doesn't have the breath of life in it. V'lo ze v'ze shedarken leilichal hazik karei habor. Likewise, shor maveh and esh have a common characteristic in that they have movement. They're darkon. Their way is to go and damage. They are not like Kahare HaBor. They are not like the case of the Bor, which we said before is a pit. But again, translation does a great deal of disservice to the concepts of this Mishnah. But nevertheless, it represents damage through an inanimate object. So the cases of Shor Maveh and Esh had the Torah written that one is obligated for damages that result from those, I would not have been able to conclude the case of Bor, Shein Darko Leilich Lazik. It is not the way of Bor to have locomotion, to go and commit damage. Hatzad Hashava Shebahen. The common denominator amongst them is Shedarkon Lahazik. All of the Mishnah examples, the Arba Ovas Nezikin, are entities that are prone to causing damage. Ushmirason Alecha, and it is the obligation of the owner of them to supervise and protect the public from them. Ukshehizik Chav Hamazik Lishalim Tishlumei Nezek. And when damage does result, so that obligates the mazik, the damager, to pay the nezek, is the name of the payment for damages that result. B'meitav ha'oretz means literally from the choice of land, choicest of land. If damage is not going to be paid for through cash, cash compensation, but rather the mazik, the damager, chooses to pay through land, he must pay with top quality land. There are several different qualities of land that the Shas makes reference to. Generally speaking, even though there's more detail than what I'm going to say now, there are three general qualities of land. Ziburis, starting from the least poorest quality, Ziburis, middle quality, Beninus, Idis is the term for the top quality land. And let us just work with the general assumption that people would prefer to have a smaller area, less acreage, but of higher quality land than expansive acreage of poor quality land. When we speak about compensation, there's a fixed amount that needs to be paid. And when you pay in terms of land, that fixed amount, the Torah says when it comes to payment for damages, must be paid from one's high quality, highest quality land, if he chooses not to pay in cash. The Gemara opens up with an analysis of the word avos, stating that the word avos, when you see that here and also in other contexts, it implies that there are subcategories. We can refer to them as toldos, the primary categories and secondary categories or subcategories. Sometimes things are lost in translation, but we're trying our best. Through the illustrations of the Gemara, I think it will become clearer what we mean. The topic heading that we see on the side of the Gemara, the Nosei / Mivneh, We will feature a triangle in the markings, tchumim, areas, achirim, other areas, shemofia b'hem ovos v'toldos, where these concepts arise. Ovos, primary categories, and toldos, subcategories, or secondary categories. Hagemara shoyeles, the Gemara will ask, ha'im hayachas l'toldos hanezikin doime l'shel Shabbos or l'shel Tumah? In the case of laws of Shabbos, and in the case of the laws of defilement, in both areas you find the term ovois. If you look at your Gemara markings itself, you look at the triangle, you see Gabi Shabbos, and then shortly thereafter there's a Tanaic source and you see dashed underline the word ovois. At the bottom line of the Gemara, and by the way, if you need to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. On the bottom line of this Omid, you see another triangle, Gabi Tumos, and shortly thereafter, you see the word Ovos again. So we have two areas in which the term Ovos appears, two areas besides Nezikin, and in each one of the areas referenced Shabbos, there are ovos, and there are toldos. There are subcategories of Shabbos melacha. Melacha can be loosely translated as creative activity. Some people have the tendency to translate melacha by using the word work, and it's very inaccurate to translate melacha as work. But melacha has to do with creative activity. Which, of course, on Shabbos one must refrain from. So on Shabbos, we mentioned there are avos melachos and there's toldos. Regarding tumah, defilement, there are primary categories of defilement, and there are toldos, subcategories. Do the toldos in these respective categories take on the same severity, the same level of importance, of significance, as the ovois? In our Gemara, we will see that in fact, it depends. In the realm of Shabbos, you'll see we have a double underline. What does it highlight shortly after the Shabbos reference? In the Gemara text, it says, Toldos and Kayotze Bohen. The toldos of Shabbos, of the Ovos Melachos, are similar to the Ovos. We haven't cited any actual examples of an Av and a Tolda with regard to Shabbos. But if we want to use just a quick example, there is an Av Melacha of Shabbos would be to plant seeds in the ground, zoreya. So planting seeds in the ground is the av melacha. It's the primary form of melacha, which was present in the construction of the Mishkan, which is the source of the 39 avos melachas, what took place in the Mishkan. There are toldos, subcategories of the avos. And if you imagine, as we said, planting a seed is an av melacha, then other activities that promote the growth of plants, like watering plants or pruning trees, and many other activities that are related in that sense to the promotion of growth of a particular plant. Those would be the toldos. I realize that there is more detail and one can be more accurate in describing these things, but for our purposes, what we said, I believe, is sufficient. Regarding the toldos of Shabbos, we just mentioned with our double underline marking, you could see toldos and kayotsu, and the halacha views them as basically the same as the ovos. You might ask, then, if that's the case, why is one called an av and the other called a tolda? We'll wait for the Gemara. The Gemara highlights that in its discussion. With regard to Tumah, there are Ovos HaTumah. Very often the term Av HaTumah appears in Halacha, in Gemaras. Av HaTumah is a, we'll say, a primary level of defilement. There are sources of Tumah that we call Ovos HaTumah and Av HaTumah, a dead sheretz, a nevela, shichvas zera. There are different examples. There's a concept of a tolda with regard to tumah, and in, it might be more familiar to some of you, the term rishon l'tumah, sheni l'tumah. These are lower grades of tumah, of defilement, which are, as the name, as we just suggested, they're lower grades. They're not as intense. They're not as widespread in their effects as an av hatumah. So in the realm of tumah, the toldos are not like the ovos. And this you can see with our markings on the top line of Omid Beis, we've highlighted that toldos en lav kayotze bohen. The question that preoccupies the Gemara is, what is the status of the toldos when it comes to the ovos nezikin? Now, the Gemara. Midiktoni avos, mechlal diko toldos. From the fact that the Mishnah chose to use the word avos, that implies that nezikin have toldos. Toldosein kayotze bohen, olav kayotze bohen. Are the toldos the subcategories of the avos nezikin? We mentioned there are four avos nezikin. Are the subcategories like the avos, or not like the avos? That's the key question. You notice in our markings we have a bracketed section, and this is actually quite a long bracketed section. On an initial read through, we recommend skip the brackets for a moment. I hope the question is clear. The toldos of avos, are they like the avos or not like the avos? Do they carry with them the same level of obligation or not? Skipping the bracketed section, what do you come to? Four lines from the top of Omid Beis, Omar Rav Papa. Rav Papa is marked with a firebox. We'll come back to that in a minute. What's Rav Papa's answer to our question? Yesh men kayotze bahen, v'yesh men lav kayotze bahen. Seems like a diplomatic answer, but it's not based on diplomacy. It's based on the facts that are on the ground. There are some toldos of some avos that are like the avos, and there are those that are lav kayotze bahen. We're using the plural. It might not be so accurate by the end of this discussion to say that in the plural form, but translation-wise, Rav Papa says there are some situations of toldos nezikin that are not like the avos. Why I hesitate in terms of the grammar, plural versus singular, because there, in fact, will be only one case that we'll see in this particular sugya where we'll end up saying that the toldos en lav kayotze bahen. Otherwise, the overwhelming majority of avos toldos relationship in the case of nezikin is like the aleph approach, that kayotze bohen. Whatever we say about the av, we will say about the tolda. Now, we didn't give any examples of what are toldos nezikin. We just said there exists such a thing called toldos nezikin. We didn't give you any examples. The Gemara, of course, will. So, in terms of the Gemara structure, we open up with a very straightforward question. Are the toldos nezikin like the avos? And what does Rav Papa answer? We saw the answer. Some are like the avos and some are not. Some of the toldos are like the avos and some of the toldos are not like the avos. What we just did was one of the masterful strokes of Gemara markings to show the superstructure of the Gemara. question and get immediately to the answer. Now, within the brackets, as we said before, we have other cases in order to give us, we'll say, a frame of reference to the regarding the question, are toldos like ovos or not? So we develop a frame of reference. Other areas where toldos appear in the context of ovos. There is a starred note that we have that introduces the bracketed section. Let's read what we've written in the margin. By the star, Achrei Sugrayim, after the brackets, Rav Papa Oyne L'Sheilas Gemara. Rav Papa answers the Gemara's question. B'socha Sugrayim, within the brackets, HaGemara Mevia Oyd Noisim Shebahem Oifia Abitui Avois V'Gishes Sheinois B'Yachas L'Toldosein. The Gemara will present two other cases, the two triangled cases, where the term Avos appears, and the different approaches that exist regarding the toldos in each category of Shabbos and toldos of Tumah. By all means, you should take note of the fact that we have a long question marking as well. As we indicated before, when we skipped directly to the answer given by Rav Papa. So now that the structure hopefully is clearer, we focus on the Gemara, the first triangle, Gabi Shabbos Tanan. Regarding the laws of Shabbos, the Mishnah says over there in Masechah Shabbos, Avois Melochos Arboim Chosarachas. There are 40 minus 1, or if you prefer, 39 Avois Melochos, 39 primary categories of constructive activity that we are prohibited from performing on Shabbos. Avos Michlal, the Kotoldos. The use of the word Avos, primary categories, indicates that there are secondary categories. Secondary examples. Toldosan Kayoitse Bohen, the Toldos of Shabbos are like the Avos. And the Gemara explains what it means when it says it's like the Avos. Lo Shno Av, Chatas Velo Shno Toldo Chatas. If the Shabbos law is violated in an unwinning fashion, in unintentional fashion, then a chatas, a sin offering, a sacrifice, is brought, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. No difference is made whether the violator violated an av category of melacha or a tolda category of melacha. We used an example before. It wouldn't make a difference as far as the sacrificial obligation is concerned whether one unintentionally or unwittingly planted a seed on Shabbos or one pruned a tree on Shabbos or one watered his crops. Watering crops would be an example of a tolda of Zoreah. Zoreah planting being an example of an av category in there. There are 39 of them in Hilchos Shabbos. What other similarity is there between an av and a tolda with regard to Shabbos? Lo shno av skila v'lo shno tolda skila. If one is warned and there are two witnesses present, and one nevertheless, after receiving a warning, intentionally violates Shabbos, knowing the consequences, he is punishable by stoning. When we make no distinction, there's no difference whether he violated an av malacha or a tolda, whether he planted a seed or whether he pruned a tree. If he did so intentionally after receiving a warning, and in the presence of two witnesses, he is culpable of court stoning. Well, that having been said, you see that the toldos are so similar to the avos. Umay iko beinav l'tolda. What's the difference between them? You'll notice we have some numbering. There's a Roman numeral number 1 over here, and within that we will give distinctions or reasons for the use of the different terms. And after raising a question on this, we will then give you a second, a Roman numeral number two, distinction between Av and Tolda. But as far as punishment is concerned, no difference between Alvas and Toldos of Shabbos. We're right now asking, well then, what's the difference? Why do you have a category of activities labeled as Ovos and a second category of Malachos labeled as Toldos? So the Gemara explains, Nafka Mina, there's a legal difference and ramification in the following. The Ilu Ovid, Shtei Ovos Bahadi Adodi. If a person unintentionally, without any interim warning, did two Ovos. He, for example, he planted seeds and he sowed some clothing. Those are two sowing. Tofer is an Av Malacha. He did two separate Ovos. Inami, Shtei Toldos, Bahadi Hadodi. Or he did two Toldos. We gave an example before of pruning trees and the Tolda of another Malacha. He did a Tolda of sowing, whatever that might be, but it's an activity that would be similar to sewing, but not actually using needle and thread. But it would have the same characteristics of say, bonding two pieces of fabric together, or any other number of examples of subcategories of primary malachas. But he did two. He violated two toldos on Shabbos of two separate areas of halacha. Mechayev akol chado v'chado. That would engender a separate obligation. Now, of course, if you're talking about killing someone, you can't kill him twice. But on a shogeg level, if violated unintentionally, he would be obligated to bring two separate sin offerings. One for violating the tolda of Zorea, and the other for violating the tolda of Tofer, sowing. V'ilu ovid av v'tolda d'day, if a person in one state of lack of awareness, there was no, say, discovery or warning in the interim between, let us say, planting a seed and then watering it. That would be an example of an av, planting the seed and watering, or he planted a seed and he pruned a tree. That's an av and its own tolda. It's a subcategory of the av. Lo mechayev elochada. If he did those two acts in one state of lack of awareness, he wasn't informed in the interim that he's violating two things, he would be obligated only in one sacrifice. So whereas doing two separate ovos or two separate toldos without any interim warning or awareness, he would be chayev two sacrifices. Doing an av and its own tolda, its own subcategory, he'd be chayev only one sacrifice. Question. Ula Rabbi Eliezer de Mechayev HaTolda B'mokim Av. There's a shita, a singular opinion, the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, that if a person planted the seed and pruned a tree, that engenders two separate sin offerings. He is Mechayev, he obligates a person who violates a tolda of the very same Av that he previously violated. Well, then, Amai Kori Le Av, Amai Kori La Tolda. What do I gain by these categories? The Gemara answers that the term Av is used as follows. Hach dahavich b'mishkin chashiva korin le'av. That activity that was done during the construction of the Mishkan, that was an activity of chashivas, of importance, so it's called an av. Hach delo havi b'mishkan chashiva kori lo tolda. That which was present in the construction of the Mishkan but was of insignificance, was not a significant action, so it was, that would be called a tolda. There's a Tosfos at the bottom that introduces an additional girsa, separate girsa, but we're not going to get into that right now. So, according to Rabbi Lozer, the term av indicates an activity done in the construction of Mishkan that was of significance, and the term tolda would relate to those actions that were lacking in significance. We continue with another category of halacha where avos and toldos appear. Gabi tumois tnan. Regarding tuma, the Tanaic source says, avos hatumos, examples of primary forms of defilement or sources of defilement, hasheretz. Sheretz is a reference to a certain category, a type of creature, usually stout-legged, creepy, crawly creature. The Torah features 8 shrutzim. There are many more shrutzim in reality, but there are 8 kinds of shrutzim that when they're dead, they convey defilement. So that's the sheretz, hashichvas zera, male semen. And at the top, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, the tomei mace. Tomei mace is an avatuma. What's a tomei mace? Tomei mace is a person or a vessel that had contact or were under the same overshadowing as a human corpse. In the case of overshadowing, we'll talk about a dead Jewish individual, a Jewish corpse. So the person that was in the same room as a Jewish corpse, or a vessel that was likewise in the same room, that vessel or person would be called an av hatuma. When a person who has absorbed that tuma level then touches another person or another vessel, that second person becomes a rishon l'tuma. The rishon l'tuma level defilement is weaker than an av level defilement. In the Gemara explains. So in the case of avos hatuma, toldosein lav kayotze bohen. Here in stark contrast to Shabbos, the toldos of tuma, the term toldos in this area is a reference to the rishon l'tuma, the example we just gave. If the avos hatuma examples were listed, toldosein, a rishon l'tuma, is not the same as an av hatuma. Dilu av, something that has the status of av hatuma, metam adam kelim, has the power of defiling another man or vessels. Ve'ilu toldos, something that's called a rishon l'tuma, and certainly anything that's lower down than that, the toldos, oichlun u'mashkin, metame odav mekelim lo metame. A tolda, a rishon l'tuma, communicates tuma, communicates defilement to food and drink. Yes, that the tolda can defile. The tolda satuma, however, the rishon l'tuma cannot defile a person or a vessel. Hocha mai. Here, the Gemara simply reiterates its question. Told us of Nezikin. How are we to look at them? Omar Rav Papa, Yeshmem Kayutzbehen, Yeshmem Lav Kayutzbehen. Some told us are like the Avos, and some told us are not. I don't want to be a spoiler telling you the end of the story, so I won't tell you the entire end of the story. But when it comes to this issue of tort law, we'll call the bottom line approach is of significance, and that is the obligation of providing restitution, is it the same by the tolda, with regard to the tolda of a nezikin, of a nezik? Is it the same as the level of restitution incurred when an av hanezek commits the damage? So Rav Papa says, in most cases, the level of obligation when it comes to a tolda is the same as when it comes to an av. There is an exception. And that brings us to the whole point of the Gemara. The search for the illustration of the Bey's comment, we have Aleph and Bey's in our markings, for the Bey's comment of Rav Papa. Where do we find a case of Toldos HaNezikin that's Lav Kayotze Ben, that's not like the Ovos HaNezikin? So of course, we can't continue a discussion about this until we define what are the toldos of the respective avos. We already presented the avos nezikin in the Mishnah, four avos nezikin. Do they have toldos? Yes, they do. What are their toldos? And once we present to you what they are, then we can come back to the question, are the toldos like the avos or not, in terms of how much do you have to pay? Is it the same amount that you have to pay as if the Av committed the damage? On the side of the Gemara, in our margin, we have a Nosei / Mivneh heading. And we also indicate, as we did in our opening remarks to today's Shiur, that this discussion goes till Dav Gimel Omid Beis. If we end up stopping the discussion in the middle, realize that that's exactly what it is, stopping in the middle, and then we'd have to resume our next Shiur with all of this in mind. So Rav Papa gets a firebox. A firebox is a rare marking in Gemara markings. It highlights either a name or an idea that will preoccupy us for at least an omid of Gemara, in this case quite a bit more. And we've written in the margin, Tshuvas Rav Papa, Rav Papa's response being Toldos Nezikin. His response, Yasik es haGemara ad Gimel Amid Beis, will preoccupy the Gemara until Daf Gimel Amid Beis. Ad Shom, until that point, haGemara techapes dugma l'toldos nezek delav kayetz ben. The Gemara will be seeking out an example of a toldos nezek that's not like the av hanezek. The crown shape that you see, toldos kol nezek v'nezek. So if you allow your eye to skim ahead, and when we learn Gemara with Gemara markings, we emphasize and encourage each one of you to allow your eye to survey the landscape, the Gemara scape. Survey it. Do you see similar markings? If you see a geometric form in Gemara markings, besides the firebox, cannot appear in isolation. It's a series marking, and it indicates more of them. So the crown shape highlights the tolda, where then what's the first crown shape you see on the page, a little less than halfway down, tolda de Karen, mahi, what is meant by the tolda of Karen, and the Gemara will list off Nagifa, Nashicha, Ravitzu, Vita. We also have a numbering scheme to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. Do you see the crown, number one, Keren? Allow your eye to skim ahead, and if you have Daf Gimel available to you, so do you see where number two appears? It's more than halfway down, Gimel Amen Aleph. There the Gemara talks about Tolda de Shein. Well, you might say, shame. What's a shame? That's a tooth. I didn't see the word shame before, and we're dealing with toldos of ovos. That means that shame is an av hanezikin. Did I even see the word Karen before? Not. We didn't even see that word. What does that mean? So we'll have to allow the Gemara to introduce these words, Karen and shame, as being avos Nezikin giving us the basis for then asking the tolda of them. What are the toldos? So what are the toldos of Shein? The Gemara will tell us there on Gimel Maravs, Nizchachra, Bekoysel Anosa, Vetinfa Peres Anosa, which, of course, we'll wait till we get there. But do you see additional crown shapes? You do. You see number three, Tolda de Regel, a new word, Regel, foot, what does that mean? And then later, you'll see something familiar, number four, on Daf Gimel Omed Aleph, Tolda de Bor. Now, Bor we saw in the Mishnah, so we'll be asking, what is the Tolda of Bor? In each case, after presenting the toldos, you'll notice, if you once again let your eye skim ahead, do you see an inverted crown shape? On the side of the Gemara, we have that feature too, dechios. They represent rejections. Rejections of what? Toldosei en elu einom hanosei shirapapa. It's true. At each stage, we'll present to you the toldos of the respective avos nezikin, the respective primary forms of nezikin. However, they are not going to be what Rav Papa Beis was referring to, because each one of these toldos, where the crown shape appears, you will find have the same characteristics as the av. So there's no distinction that we'll be able to make in terms of the payment scheme, so that all of these toldos are kayotze bahen. So where do we find Rav Papa's second comment? There are toldos that are not like the avos. Where do you find that? And that's what keeps the Gemara going on and on. And as we said, if you follow the cadence of the Gemara, you'll see a regular crown and then an inverted crown. That you saw number one. When you get to number two, when we mentioned Tolda de Shein, a crown and then an inverted crown. And number three, Regel, you see a crown and an inverted crown. And you get to number four, Tolda de Bor, you see the same thing, and an inverted crown will appear at the upper part of Daf Gimel Amud Beis. And the Gemara goes on with number five, Mav'eh, number six, Eish. Mav'eh is a term we've seen already. We saw that in the Mishnah. Hev'er, we're assuming is like Eish, is the same as Eish. That would be number six. Where then, if you're following this marking scheme, you see an inverted triangle on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, a little more than about halfway down, where then do we find Rav Papa Beis appearing? Where is there an example of Toldosei Lav Kayotze Bahen? So that will appear finally there on Gimel Amud Beis. So we read Rav Papa's answer in the Gemara text. Immediately, you see a bracketed section. Rav Papa mentioned that there are toldos that are like the avos and some that are not like the avos. The Gemara, right after the brackets, starts its investigation. Tolda de Keren Mayi. What's the tolda of Keren? Now, the word Keren we didn't see yet, so we'll have to see us say a word or two about that in a moment. But we have a starred note introducing the bracketed section. Sograim elu mevusasim al divrei toisus de remasel tana rabbanan. The second toisus on the page serves as the basis for our markings. The second toisus on the page, tana rabbanan shloisha avos hifsik bebraisa zu. The Gemara interrupts the flow. When we say interrupts, that's the green light for putting in brackets. Brackets indicates an interruption. So the bracket, the Gemara is hifsik b'braisas of the first to the same lavka yitzibahen to come up papa. Hey, we're trying to figure out what Rav Papa's Tadusan Lav Kitzibin is referring to. In order to be able to analyze Rav Papa's question, we have to learn this brisa that's within the brackets. But as far as the, we'll call the logical flow of things, Rav Papa said some are like and some are not like, and then you would analyze, well, what are the toldos to begin with, and that's what you see right after the brackets. The starred note continues. Achrei ha-sugrayim, after the brackets, Gemara mevareres mahi kavonas Rav Papa. What's Rav Papa's intent? What is he referring to when he says that there are those that are lav kayotze bahen? Matras ha-sugrayim, the purpose of these brackets, levodeid, esma shekosher yeshiros ledivrei Rav Papa, binyan toldos delo kayotze bahen. We want to isolate that which is directly related to Rav Papa's comment. In other words, that which is somewhat well, background information, we want to separate that. And that's what we do with the brackets. Besochas Agrayim, Arishonim, within the first brackets that you see on this page, Agmom Vareres, Loma Brais Hevi, Beis Psukim Lochiach, the Negicha, Hainu Bekeren. Besochas Agrayim Ashniim, Agmom Vareres, Mayevdel, Hamikuri, Bein Nogach, Le Nogaf, Loma Toldos, Elu, Kshuros, Le Keren. This comment will become much clearer when we go directly into the Gemara. So now we go to the bracketed section. Tonu Rabbanan. Gimel Avos Nemru Bashor. There are three primary forms of damage that are related to the damaging ox. Now the word ox we saw in our Mishnah. We mentioned there are Arba Ovas Nezikin. And the first one was Shor. Shor itself is broken down into three categories. But they're not referred to as Toldos. The three Ovos that are associated with the primary av of shor are hakeren vashen voregel. Keren is a reference to, as Rashi says, lingoach, goring. Shane, that has to do with teeth, but more specifically eating. Voregel, regel is a foot. That which an animal tramples as it walks along. It might trample upon and break vessels as it's walking along. So the owner of an ox that gores, that eats other people's crops, that tramples other people's vessels, is obligated to offer compensation. Now, we're not getting into details right now. For example, does it matter where it takes place? If someone left in a major thoroughfare some unguarded utensils or vessels, and someone's ox came scampering along and trampled on those the fine china service that he left outside on a major thoroughfare, you would probably guess that the owner of the ox is not going to be obligated to pay for damages. A major thoroughfare is not the place for leaving personal items. So that the obligation to compensate for these damages is dependent on additional factors. Where did it take place? The Gemara will deal with these things as we go along in the Masechta. The source we read mentioned that there are three avos associated with shor. Do you remember the Rashi at the very beginning of today's shiur, where Rashi said that avos are those things that are recorded in the scriptures? Well, if you do, so then you'll appreciate the Gemara as it goes on. Keren Minalon. Where does the Torah make reference to Keren as a form of damage? Keren has to do, here on the translation level, the horns of an animal. Tetanu Rabbanan. So the Brisa says, Ki Yigach. This is a pasuk in Shmos, Perichaval, Parshas Mishpatim. It says, Ki Yigach, when an animal is Yigach, Ein Yigicha Lebekeren. Yigach means goring with its horns. And how do I know that? Shenemar, Vayas Lo Tzidkiyo Ben Kenana, Karne Barzel, Vayomer Ko Omar Hashem Ba'ila, Tenagach, Es Aram. Without translating the pasuk word for word, you see with our markings we've highlighted the words karne and tenagach. Tenagach is like the word yigach. In the Torah itself, it just says ki yigach shor ish eshor eyu. It doesn't say how yigach takes place. How are we to know what yigach? Yigach is a verb form, but with what? So here we have a pasuk from Melachim Aleph, which reveals that the word yigach has to do with an action done with karne, with horns. The Omer, another pasuk is cited, B'chor shoro hadarlo v'karne re'em karnov, bohem amim yenagach. Again, focusing on the markings in this pasuk, you see karne and yinagach, so that when the Torah in Parshas Shmos says that you're obligated to compensate when your ox does negicha, negicha is damage through animal's horns. However, as we mentioned in our long editorial disclaimer at the beginning of this shiur, do not fall into the translation trap. Horns, yes, it refers to horns, but it's not limited to horns. We have to wait for the Gemara to describe the damage of negicha, of keren, before we can come to any conclusions. Be rest assured that keren is not limited to simple goring with horns. But whatever goring with horns characterizes, that will apply to other forms of damage as well. In order to make its point that ki yigach in Shmos Perek Chof Aleph is damage through horns, two verses were cited. We had marked them as Aleph and Beis. The Gemara asks, my v'omer, do you know the word v'omer, two lines above with squiggle underline? Why did this Tanaic source cite a second pasuk? Would I not have already known from the first citation that tenagach, yigach, is associated with keren, karne, keren in the plural? What do I need the second pasuk for? The Gemara answers, V'chi teimo, you might have thought, had I had just the pasuk that we labeled with Aleph, from Melachim Aleph, Perikov Beis, had I just had that pasuk, I would have thought as follows, Divrei Torah mi Divrei Kabbalah lo yalfinan. Divrei Torah is a reference to the unclear verse in Shmos. That's from the five books of Moses. That's Divrei Torah. That cannot be, elucidated by a later holy work, Divrei Kabbalah. Kabbalah, a reference to the subsequent books of the Holy Scriptures, the Tanakh, outside of the Torah. So that we don't learn Torah concepts through verses found in the Nevi'im or Ksuvim, in the prophets or the later writings. So I can't rely on the Aleph Pasuk, Melachim Aleph Perichov Beis, which began with the words Vayaslo Tzidkiyo, which was, so what happens? Toshma, So I cite a second verse, which happens to come from the book of Devarim, Sefer Devarim, where there it says, "Bechor Shura Hodar Lo," and it went on to use the words, "Mekarni Reim Kano Vem Amim Yenagach." That would be okay, because here I'm not elucidating a Torah, let's see, Torah word, a Torah unclarity through a verse from the prophets, but through another verse from the Torah. That's fair play. So maybe that's the reason we had to cite a second pasuk. The Gemara asks, there isn't any problem in the first place. Vahai meilaf hu. Meilaf would mean literally it's a teaching. It's the teaching of something novel, something new that I wouldn't have known before. What are we doing when we're citing the subsequent psukim in this source after Shmois Chof Aleph, after citing Ki Yigach? What are we trying to do after that? We're not trying to discover something new. We're trying simply to discover the translation of something already stated. So, Gilui Milsa B'Almahu T'Negicha B'Keren Hu. We're not revealing a new law based on what you see in the prophets. We're simply elucidating, translating an unclear word in the Torah. That's called Gilui Milsavam, literally revealing. It's a matter of revealing a simple point as opposed to teaching something of a novel nature. Something that of that quality I cannot use as my foundation information from the prophets and from the Ksuvim, from the later writings. But when it comes to simple, let's say, clarification of already stated ideas, and all that was needed is simple clarification, that's called Gilui Milsa. And you're allowed to refer to the Nevi'im or Ksuvim, holy works, in order to reveal the meaning of words in the Torah. So, if that's the case, I didn't need to cite Dvarim Perek Lamed Gimel Bechor Shoro Hodar Lo. I would have been able to rely on the pasuk from Melachim. So why does the Tanaic source go on with citing pasuk, the Beis pasuk, Bechor Shoro? Ela, the reason for the second pasuk cited is that without it, Mahu detema ki polig Rachmona ben Tam lemuad hanimili betlusha. You know, here the Gemara just said a lot without giving us the background. So let us fill in the blanks. We mentioned that there were three avos regarding Ashur. The first one was Karen. Karen having to do with goring. In the case of Karen, there is the difference between a short tam, a docile animal, and a muad, an animal that's prone to create damage. A tam is an animal that is assumed to be docile, and if it gores a first time, a second time, a third time, only half damage is paid. After goring three times, it then is, let's say, recategorized as a mu'ad. Mu'ad that gores, a fourth goring, if you will, on the part of that animal, the owner has to pay full damages. So that's the payment scale when it comes to Karen. And that's the payment scale that you find in the Torah where it refers to the ki yigach. The word yigach associated with Karen-related damage. And within the realm of Karen-related damage, there is this concept of paying only half damages. So we go back to the Gemara. Why do I need the second pasuk cited that we labeled base? So Mahu Detemo ki polig rachmona bein tam lemuad. When does the Torah make a distinction between the tam and the muad type oxen? Hanimili betlusha. That's if the animal picked up in its mouth, like you see in the first pasuk, it picked up in its mouth some loose horns and gored with them, shoved the horn while holding it in its mouth into some other animal or some person. In a case like that, there I would have thought I'm going to make a distinction that I think everyone could agree is a very unusual behavior pattern on the part of the animal. And when you have unusual behavior patterns, that's grounds for half damages. Paying, that's called a short tam, the docile animal. When it does something that's very unusual, the resultant payment is half payment. So I would have thought that when is goring unusual? When the animal gores with detached horns. Avo b'mechuberes, ema kula mu'edes hi. However, horns growing out of the animal's head. Mechuberes means literally attached. They're growing out of the animal's head, and it gores like that. I would have thought, had I had just the pasuk from Melachim Aleph, I would have thought the case of Mechuberes is Ema Kula Mu'edes Hi. That's its normal way of behavior. And Kula Mu'edes would mean that at the very first act of goring with its horns growing out of its head, he would have to pay full damages. Toshma, therefore, we cited the second pasuk to say that the Yigach word of the Torah, which engenders half damages and full damages, applies as well to attached horns. That's Toshma Bechor Shoro Hoderlo. There it's talking about the horns of an ox. Not like in the pasuk from Melachim Aleph, where the prophet fashioned metal horns. Those were detached horns. The prophet fashioned them. The pasuk in Devarim Lamed Gimel, Bechor Shoro Hodarlo V'Karnei Re'im Karnov, those are referring to the horns of the Re'im, a type of animal that's growing out of its head. So, by giving us the second pasuk, I see that Ki Yigach applies to Karen growing out of an owl's head. And the term Karen is a reference to the Tam versus Muad categories. So that if we can just restate this in simple terms, I needed the second pasuk as well to teach that goring with horns, whether they're detached horns or even attached horns growing out of an animal's head, since it's an unusual thing for the animal to do, it's going to pay chatzi nezek, half nezek, until it does it three times. Toldo de Karen Mahi. What is the Gemara trying to do now? We're trying to answer Rav Papa's. We're trying to explain Rav Papa's comment above that there are toldos of Nezikin that are lav kayotze bahen. So toldo de Karen Mahi. What are the toldos of Karen? Negifa, Neshicha, Ravitza, Ube'ita. We look in Rashi. A little further down in the Rashi commentary, Negifa, Shedochva begufa, Vezika begavona. The animal intentionally shoved with its body something else. And in shoving it, it damaged that item. That's Negifa. Neshicha. Neshicha is a case where the animal bites. Ravitza, that's where an animal crouches down. It saw some vessels and crouched down upon the vessels, and of course crushed them. Ubirita. Birita is an animal kicks with its foot, and in its act of kicking, it kicked over some vessels or it smashed some vessels. So those are the toldos of Keren. If you skip the bracketed section, use your bracket length indicator, the Gemara says at that point, Elo toldosan lav kayotsubend of Domrav Papa, hey, what is an illustration of Rav Papa's second comment that the toldosan lav kayotsubend? Why, what happened up till this point in the Gemara? Up till this point in the Gemara, we demonstrate how the toldos of Keren are just like Keren. And whatever obligation you have with regard to Keren, the same thing will be if it does damage through one of the toldos of Keren. Let's go back to the Gemara where we have the brackets. My shno negicha dekori lo av. Negicha, we said, is a word interchangeable with Keren. So, what is unique about Keren that it's called Av? Dichtiv ki yigach. Negifonami ksiv ki yigof. There's another posuk, Shmos, Perek, Chofala, posuk lamed hey. We have it included on the side of our Gemara. Let's read it. Let's read the posuk together. It said, V'chi yigof, shor ish es shor re'eu, v'omeis, u'mochru es es shor achai, v'chotzu es kasmu, v'gam es ha'meis yechetzun. And Pasuk says, when a person's ox is yigof, the next guy's ox, and it dies, so the Pasuk says, you sell the body, and half damages are paid, and there's more detail to the Pasuk than we're going to deal with now. But in the Gemara, what are we asking? Why is only Negicha, which is associated with Keren, referred to as an Av? And did we see that? Certainly, above, we saw a source that said, Gimel Avos Nemru Bishar HaKeren. And Keren is associated with Negicha. Well, if that's the case, let's read the Gemara. My shno negicha de kori lo av dechsev ki yigach. Why is negicha called an av? And now we didn't see the word negicha called an av, but we saw the word keren above. And keren we saw is interchangeable with the word yigach. So why is keren referred to as an av? Because the pasuk says ki yigach. It's a verse in the Torah. Well, negifa namiksev ki yigof. The negifa also should be called an av, and yet it's not. What's the thinking of the Gemara? The thinking right now, when it says negifa nami ksiv ki yigof, that negifa is the, as we read in the Rashi before, it's the shedochva begufa veziko bekavana. Rashi indicates it's a body shove. So why do you say that only horn goring is called an av? Why not call body shove on the part of the animal also an av? The pasuk appears ki yigof. The Gemara answers, hi negifa, negicha hi. The word ki yigof in this pasuk doesn't mean shoving with a body. It means negicha, goring with horns. Desanya, we have a brisa, it's a bit terse. It's referring to how the psukim appear in the context of the damaging ox. And the source says, posach benegifa. The first reference to the goring ox is with the word negifa. The siyem benegicha. And at the end of that section of the Torah, an unusual word, a change takes place, and it says, "Ki." It says there, "Ki yigach." After opening up the section of the Torah with the expression ki yigof in pasuk in the next pasuk, it says Rashi quotes it on the second line under the Gemara, oy noida kishor nagahu. Doesn't say kishor nagahu, but that would have been more appropriate. If you're opening up your discussion by using the word yigach, ki yigach shor isha shoreu, then when you continue in the psukim in that very context, it should have said kishor nagahu. I'm sorry, let me correct myself. Since it opened up with the expression ki yigof, it should have said ki shor nagofu, but it doesn't do that. It says o noda ki shor nagohu. So it's a type of imbalance in the scripture itself. And what does the Brisa say here? Posach ben egifa. The posach opened up by saying ki yigof, v'siyim ben egicha, and it continued in posach lam b'vav. The next posach says, oh no, da kishor nagohu. So it opened with negifa in pasuk lamed hey, and in pasuk lamed vav it closes with a changed form of the verb, and it says negicha. Lo marloch. This change in words tells me zuhi negifa, zuhi negicha. That negifa is in fact damage done just like negicha, damage done with horns. So it's true that the tolda of Karen is negifa. That is a body shove. The verse that refers to negifa is not a body shove, but it's simple goring. How do I know that negifa is goring? Because the Torah, when it refers to negifa, it opens up using that verb form, and then in the next breath, so to speak, the next pasuk, you see the word negicha used, indicating that negifa really is goring. That's as far as the scripture is concerned. But when it comes to toldos of Karen and the use of the word negifa, that's a body shove, where the animal shoves another animal and causes damage. The Gemara asks, "My shno gabi odom dichtiv ki yigach, umay shno gabi behemo dichtiv ki yigof." Why, in the context of an animal goring a man, does the Torah speak in terms of ki yigach? And when it comes to an animal goring another animal, it uses the word ki yigof. Why the difference for the same basic action? Animal goring with horns. When the victim is a person, you see ki yigach. When the victim is a behemoth, you see ki yigof. The Gemara answers, Adam de isle mazla ksiv ki yigach. A person that, as a human being, a person has a mazal. A mazel is a word that's a bit difficult to translate, but it's a reference to, in this case, Rashi. We'll look at Rashi in the wide lines. Adam, it says, Gabi Adam, Kisha Shor Nogach Adam Ksiv Ki Gach Shor Es Ish. The Gabi Negichos Shor Beshor Ksiv Ki Gof Shor Ish Es Shor Ehu. When it comes to damaging a man, an ox gores a man, it says ki yigach. When an ox gores an ox, it says ki yigof. Rashi goes on to say, Adam de isle mazla. What does that mean? Shiesh lo das lishmor es gufo. A person has common sense. He has a mind about him to protect himself from damage. So we go back to the Gemara. Adam de isle mazla, a person that has common sense to guard himself from damage, ksiv ki yigach. So that's the term that is used. There's a, the Gemara goes on, behema deles le mazla, behema that doesn't have those characteristics like those of a man, doesn't have its the good sense to watch itself. So ksiv ki yigof. Umilsagav urche kamashmulan, and we're taught something by the way. The Adam, sorry, the muad the Adam, have a muad, the behema. An ox that's proven itself by recurring gorings of man, it becomes a muad. We said after it gores three different men, that makes the animal on its next goring a shor hamuad, which would obligate the owner in paying full damages. Up till that point, he was paying only half damages. An animal that's established itself as a with a reputation of muad la'adam, it's a goring ox with regard to people as victims, have a muad la'behema. You can rest assured that if it was successful in goring a man three times, it would be considered a mu'ad regarding the goring of an animal. A man, we'll say, is harder to damage than an ox, because a man is always on guard and he knows how to avoid problems. And if he is damaged, then certainly with regard to damaging another ox, an owner of such an ox would be obligated to pay full damages. That's what we call the milsa agav urchi kamashon. That's something that we're taught tangentially. That muad l'adam have a muad l'behema. However, muad l'behema lo have a muad l'adam. If an animal has gored another ox three times, that's called muad l'behema. That doesn't mean that he is considered muad regarding damaging of a person. There's a Rashi that we should have read earlier, but it's the second of the widest lines under the Tosfos, Ksiv ki yigach. We said that when it comes to an animal goring a person, the Torah says ki yigach. What's behind that word? Devadai niskaven eshol hara. An animal definitely had intention to wreaking the damage. Ubolov b'koyach, and he gores the person with force. Avol negifa, the word negifa v'mashma she matzai oimed v'dachvoi b'karnov. It conveys the idea or the scenario of an animal chancing upon another animal and then impacting it with its horns. The next pshat in Rashi, you see Lishna Achrino number 2, Isle Mazla, a person that has a mazel, Veno Noach Lamiso, Negifa, the chifas karen ma'at, a person that has a mazel, it's not so easy to kill a person with a negifa. What's a negifa? That's the chifas karen ma'at. It's a light shoving with the perpetrator's horns. Aval ella benegicha b'koyach b'kavana. If, however, there was a goring with force and intent, ubetchivas karen baguf. That would be where the animal wedges its horns into the victim's body. So let's turn back to the Gemara. You notice to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text an arrow. Above, there's an arrow as well, and on that line, the word neshicha appeared as a tolda of Karen. The Gemara asks, Neshicha tolda de shein hi. Neshicha, if anything, it should be categorized as a tolda, a subcategory of shein. Now, shein was mentioned above as one of the ovois of shor, one of the primary forms of damage done by an ox, accounted for by verses. Why then does the term neshicha, which is biting, appear as a tolda of Karen when it could have been categorized as a tolda of Shane, a subcategory of damage done by teeth. The Gemara says, lo, not so. Shane, yesh hano lezeka. When we refer to a shor damaging through Shane, it means it eats someone's crops. It eats someone's food. The animal has hano, has pleasure, while the damage is taking place. Ha, neshicha, the biting. An animal bites without eating. Ein hano lezeka. There's no pleasure derived. Therefore, neshicha is a subcategory of keren, goring, which also is characterized by ein hano lezeka. The animal doesn't derive any body pleasure from goring. I hope everyone sees how we're developing concepts of damage, categories, as opposed to simple translations, so that when we speak about Karen as being a primary form of damage, the characteristics of Karen, amongst other things, while being something unusual, hence you have the distinction between Tam and Muad, half payment versus full payment, half payment because in its first stages it's unusual. You have this distinction, non-pleasure, no hano, as opposed to Shane, where the animal derives hano. We ask a similar question. Ravitsa ubi'ita. These were terms that you found above. When the Gemara listed the toldos of Karen, it mentioned ravitsa, crouching down and crushing vessels, and bi'ita, kicking. But are these not, in fact, leg-related damages? Hence, the Gemara asks, Ravitsa ubi'ita tolda de regel hi. You would assume that those are subcategories of regel. Regel, which was mentioned above as one of the three ovos of shor. Rashi, three lines from the bottom, Ravitsa tolda de regel hi. Crouching down is a form of damage done by foot. The al yadei kfifas reglaim hi rovetzis. An animal crouches down by it folding its feet under its body, and hence lowering its body, so that through the bending of its feet, it ends up in this state of rovetzis, of lying down, crouching down, lying down, and hence the resultant damage of vessels underneath it. So why do we categorize Ravitsa and Be'ita as tolda of Karen, where we had our crown marking halfway down the page, while Ravitsa and Be'ita are accomplished, committed through the feet? The Gemara answers, lo, it would be incorrect to categorize Ravitsa Be'ita as tolda de regel. Regel hezeka motsui. Damage done by regel is common. Whenever the animal is walking along, it's prone to do damage through walking. And if there's anything in its path, it will shortly be found underfoot of the animal. That's hezeka motsui, common. Hani, but for an animal to crouch down or kick something, ein hezekon motsu, it's unusual for an animal to, let's say, crouch down on top of vessels, or for an animal to do a kicking action. Therefore, it does not deserve to be, Ravitsa and Be'ita do not qualify for being under the category of regel. Rashi adds a little more. If you look at Rashi's second line from the bottom, Hani ein hezekon motsui, these are not common forms of damage. Hilkof told it to Karen Hain. They are therefore categorized as Karen forms of damage. The ein hezekon motsui, Karen also, it's unusual for an animal to gore. Vein hano lezekoi, and the animal has no pleasure from it. And likewise with the kicking or the crouching, there's no pleasure. Umishalmi chatzi nezek kekaren, and as a result, the payment scale for damage done through revitza or beita, crouching or kicking, would be half damages, until it does it, of course, three times. What have we accomplished in the last section of Gemara? We've discovered what the toldos of keren are. Are the toldos of keren like keren or not? Ella, the Gemara goes on. Toldosein lav kayotzim and domar Rav Papa ahei. Rav Papa's comment above, the Bey's comment, that the toldos of the avos, some of them are not like the avos. What is it going on? We've put this phrase in a firebox with a note on the side. The starred note says, Simun ze bo laharos. This marking is here to show chashivu shelizu, the significance of this question. Hi tasikas a gemara ad daf gimel amid beis. This question preoccupies the gemara till gimel amid beis. So this issue of toldosem lav kayvitz and that Rav Papa mentioned, ahe means on what? What is it going on? What is it referring to? Ilemo ahani. If it's referring to the toldos, these toldos, the toldos of Karen that we just got finished describing, and you're going to tell me that the toldos are not like the avos, that they're going to have a different payment scale, why should that be? Maishno Karen de kavonosi lahazik u'moincho shmirosin olecho. What is different about Karen that we know there's intent on the part of the animal to wreak the damage? Mamoncha means it's your possession. It's your mamon. It's your item. The animal is your possession. And ushmirasolecha, and its guarding is an obligation that rests upon you. Those are the characteristics of formal Av level Karen. Well, Hani Nami, with regard to the toldos, the four toldos, Negifa, Neshicha, Revitza, Bita, they have the same exact characteristics. Kavarasa and Lahazik, there the animal is damaging not as it's merely walking along. It kicks, for example. It crouches down on vessels. There it has destructive intent. Umamonchon, it's your animal, it's your item. Ushmirason olecho, and you're obligated to supervise the animal as with regard to negifa, neshicha, revitza, bita, just like Karen, just like standard goring. Ela toldo de Karen ke Karen. Notice the inverted crown indicates that this is not going to answer our question, namely, Rav Papa's comment of Lav Kayusaban is not going to be found in the Told of Karen. Why? Told of the Karen to Karen. V'chi ka'omar Rav Papa, ashen v'regel. If you notice, we have our double underline marking, but highlighting just shen without regel. Regel will be a separate discussion that you'll see when you get to the crown shape number 3. So Rav Papa's comment might very well have been going on the other Av of Shor. What was the other Av of Shor? Shane. And also Regel. Now within the brackets, you see, we have a starred note to the side. Sogram L'Shem Dilug. These brackets are for skipping purposes initially. Kidei lishma retzef hachashiva, in order to maintain continuity of thought. Chipus todos nezikin shalem shayach divrei Rav Papa beis. The todosein lav kayotze bohen. So now, the Gemara have just stated that kikom Rav Papa ashein v'regel. Let's skip the brackets for a moment. It's a long bracketed section. You'll notice how far it goes down. Goes down about more than halfway down. Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara there picks up and says, "Tolda de Shein Mahi." Well, what is Tolda of Shein? And it says, Nishab b'kaisanos v'dhinfa perisanosa. Those are examples without translating. And the Gemara goes through the same motions as we did with the Karen. Ma'ishno shein d'yeshano l'zeikon malachos shmeres olecho. Haninami yeshano l'zeikon malachos shmeres olecho. The toldos of shein have the same characteristics as your basic shein. Your basic damage done by tooth, by eating. So the toldos are the same, have the same characteristics. And the told of the shein kishein. And at that point, the Gemara says that the example of the toldos of shein are not going to be the tolda that's lav kayotzvan that Rav Papa mentioned. And that at that point, the Gemara goes on to number three. So here, the Gemara where the brackets begins, shein. V'regel heichik sivi. Notice, before we even get to discovering what the toldos of shein and regel are, we have to find where in the Torah does the Torah make reference to damage done by shein v'regel. After all, we called shein and regel avos of shor, and we mentioned that avos are those kind of damages that are referred to in the verses. So the Gemara is asking, like rightfully so, where does shein and regel, damage done by, literally by tooth and by foot, where are they written? But you notice, I hope you realize by now, that simply to say damage done by tooth and foot as are the ovos of shein and regel, is simply inaccurate, because we saw already damage done by tooth. It's a told of Karen. We saw damage by foot, by crouching and by kicking. That's a told of Karen. So what do we mean when we speak about shein v'regel? So we have to go with the flow of the Gemara and discover that shein has to do with, we saw before, hanol ezeka. It has pleasure. It's something that is, it's a damage through eating. And regel, we also saw that it's motsui, it's something that's common. Where does the Torah refer to these? So the Gemara answers, after asking, shein regel, hechik sivi, we're reading in the brackets, desanya, the posuk says, vishilach. Now, you'll notice on the side of the Gemara, we've quoted the posuk in full. Shmois Perchav Beis, Pasuk Dalet. The Pasuk says, Ki Yaver Ish Sode Kerem Vishilach Ez Be'iroi Ubier Beste Acher Metiv Sode Umetiv Karmo Yeshalem. A lot of unusual words in this Pasuk. It opens up with the expression Ki Yaver. What does that mean? And what does Vishilach Ez Be'iro mean? The Gemara says, Vishilach ze horegel. The word Vishilach indicates damage done through trampling. Vechenu omer, the word Vishilach is seen together with regel, Meshalche regel hashor vachamor. So we quote this posuk from the prophet Yeshaya to show that the word Vishilach, like Meshalche, is associated with regel. So the Torah, by saying Vishilach, is referring to an av nezikin that we call regel. Ubi'er, that was also in the pasuk we read, zu hashein. That's damage through that which is done by the teeth, by eating. V'chenu omer, kasher yiva'er. We continue at the top of daf gimel, hagolol ad tumo. Now, when you look at this pasuk, you don't see the word shein. You see the word yaver, which is like the word ubi'er. So this pasuk from Lochem Aleph says yaver, and it says the word hagolol, the top word of Daf Gimel and Aleph. That word hagolol is a reference to a tooth, to teeth. Kasher v'hagolol ad tumo. How does the word galol have any connection to the word teeth? So Rashi explains how, depending on how you translate the word galol, if you translate it from the word migule, migule means something exposed. the teeth of an animal, when it eats, its teeth are visible. So Rashi on the top line says, "Hagolol hainu shein shipamim megula pamim mechusa." Sometimes it's exposed, sometimes it's not exposed. Uksiv bei yaver, and together with golol, you have the word yaver, and the word ubier was in our Torah pasuk, making shein and av nezikin. There's another take on the word golol. Golol commonly refers to feces. So Rashi says, Lishnachrina golol ze rei. Rei is the solid waste from animals. Shashem mevairas lemachol v'nasis golol kamo gololei adam gololei behema. The teeth, while the animal eats, it converts the food into eventually that which is relieved from the animal, the waste that comes forth, and so the waste coming forth from an animal can be traced back to the action done by its teeth, the action of eating. So the word golol in this context since it's the result of that which teeth do, so we can say golol is a reference to the av nezikin of shein. Omar Mar, you can see we have a topic heading with a structural note on the side under the mivne, and those same mivne heading, and this is a volcano shape, trapezoid, and it says Omar Mar. You'll notice how that expression is highlighted as you continue through the page. V'shilach zu haregel, ubier zu hashein, chayovan lem gam im lo mechaya karna, v'gam im ozlu memela. We will see in the Gemara that the obligation for compensating as a result of shein and regel applies even if the crop wasn't completely destroyed. Likewise, even if the animal went on its own into someone's field, even if you didn't send it into the field. Our note continues by saying, Simunim amyuadim lavlid hadimyon bein shnei aktoyim. We're using this marking to show the similarity of structure between the first Omar Mar quote, which is then followed by a diamond highlighting the word shein, and in the middle of the discussion, you see a dashed underlined salta daita chamina idi v'idi yashen. That same type of structure appears the next volcano shape, Omar Mar, and then there's a dashed underlined salta daita chamina idi v'idi aregel, and hopefully the Gemara structure will be made easier through these markings. Omar Mar. V'shilach zu haregel. V'cheinu omer m'shachi regel ashar v'chamok. This is a quote from what we saw on Beis Amud Beis. How do I know that v'shilach is damage done by foot, by walking, by trampling? Because taimo dekosav rachmona m'shachi regel ashar v'chamor. Because I have that pasuk in which you see the word m'shalche together with the word regel. Without that, what would you have done with the word vishilach? What else could it have meant? Ikeren ksiv. If you would have thought that vishilach is a reference to keren, the damage done by horns, and bear in mind, we're referring to the pasuk Shmos Perichov Beis Pasuk Dalad, where the pasuk said vishilach es bi'iroi ubier b'steacher. A man sent his biro. The targum of the targums, that word biro is a reference to a behema. He sent his behema, and it damaged in someone's field. What could vishilach mean other than regel? In other words, the source before cited the pasuk from Yeshaya in order to clarify what vishilach in Shmois Chof Beis meant. Would you have thought it meant something else? Well, what else could it have meant? E Karen Ksiv, E Shein Ksiv. If it would have been a reference to Karen, there's a separate pasuk that dealt with the damage of Karen. We saw Ki Yigach Shor, and if it's a reference to Shein, Shein is accounted for by the pasuk Ubier B'Steacher. So the Gemara says, Itzterich. No, I need the clarification provided by Yeshaya Perek Lamed Beis, the Pasuk Meshachi Regel. Without that, Sagadei Techamina, Idi V'idi, Ashen. Without that, I would have thought that the words V'shilach and the words Ubi'er are both tooth related. V'ha de Mechalya Karna, V'ha de lo Mechalya Karna. Don't be tricked by the word Karna. Karna means principle, the principal plant. Ha de Mechalya Karna means Shein, where the animal destroys the plant from its roots, destroys it completely. Mechalia means to finish it off, to completely destroy it. And hadalo mechalia karna, that would be damage, partial damage of the crop. So I would have thought that these two words in the pasuk in Shmos Perichov Beis v'shilach as biro and ubi'er v'secher are both eating related damages, one where it's a complete damage, where it's partial damage, komash malon. Therefore, I have the clarification of the word mishalche to tell me that vishilach in that posuk is not shein, it's rather regel. V'hashtadu kimna regel. Now that I know that vishilach esbiro means animal damaging through trampling, shein. From where will I know that the owner of an animal that does partial crop destruction through eating, that he's obligated? That he's obligated to compensate for that? I would think maybe only if it's a complete destruction of the crop. If it's partial, so the crop will grow back, the victim doesn't suffer a total loss. Maybe the owner of the animal shouldn't have to compensate. The owner of the damaging animal, that is. So the Gemara says, so how do I know? The Gemara asks, how do I know that Shein the lo mechayer kana is obligated? The owner is obligated? Dumya de regel. It's taught in the pasuk. Shein is taught together with regel in the same pasuk. Dumya means similar to regel. Ma regel, just like in the case of trampling. Lo shna mechayer kana velo shna lo mechayer kana. There is no distinction between Mechalya Karna versus not. You see, we didn't mention this earlier, but Mechalya Karna, total destruction, was alluded to by the term Ubi'er. Rashi makes that point on the second narrow line of the Gemara. Ubi'er hainu hecha de Mechalya Karna. Total destruction. That's what the word Ubi'er implies. So, since Shein is taught together with regel in the same pasuk, and by regel you don't have the word ubier. There's no distinction, therefore, between partial and complete damage. Af Shein lo shna mechayer kana v'lo shna lo mechayer kana. Likewise, with regard to Shein, there is no distinction, and hence, even if the Shein damage is partial, compensation must be made. Omar Mar, we quote again from that which was mentioned before. Ubi'er ze hashein v'cheinu omer kasher yiva'er hagolol atumo. The word ubi'er in Shmois Perek Chof Beis means damage done through tooth, through eating. And how do I know that? How do I know that ubi'er is associated with tooth? Because of the posuk yiva'er hagolol atumo. And we explained before that the word golol is a reference to teeth. Time of the cost of Rachmona Kashirvaya Golav Tumo. How do I know that Ubi'er means Shein? Because I have the clarification, the elucidation of the posuk from Lochamala Perik Yudalit Kashir Yavayar. Holav Hochi, and if not for that, Bemayu Kimnola. How would I have, what alternative did I have for explaining literally, how would I have established it? Do you have any alternatives? E Karen, Ksiv? If the Torah wants to obligate me for Karen, well, that's already accounted for by another pasuk. We said ki igach, e regel Ksiv. And if Uvier was a reference to regel, that was already accounted for by Vashilach. What do I need the Kasher Yavir pasuk for? So the Gemara says, Itzterich, I need that Kasher Yevayar Pasuk. Salka Daita Chamina, without it, I would have thought, Edi V'Edi, I would have thought that V'Shilach and Ubier are a Regel, are both references to Regel. Hada Ozu Memela, Hada Shalcha Mishluchi. One is a case where the animal goes on its own into someone's field and damages, or someone else's property and damages, and one is where the owner directed it, sent the animal into damage. Komash Malan, now that I have Ki Yevaer, the Pusuk of Ki Yevaer HaGolol Atumo, I know that Ubier is Shane. Now that you've said that Ubier is a reference to Shane, Regel di Oslam Mela Minolan, how do I know that the owner of an animal that went on its own into someone's field and damaged, went into someone's property and damaged through trampling, that the owner of the damaging animal is Chayev? After all, the Torah used the word Vashilach, reference to foot. Vashilach implies that the owner sent the animal in. But what about if it goes on its own? Where do I know that from? Dumya de Shane. Since Regel is taught in the same Pasuk alongside Shane, Ma Shane lo shna shalcha shluchi lo shna dozo memela, just like by the case of Shane, no distinction was made. There was no Vashilach by Shane. So there's no distinction made between going on its own or owner sending it. Af Regel, so too, with regard to Regel, even though the word Vashilach appears, nevertheless, Regel is taught together with Shein, Lo Shna Shalcha Shluchi, Lo Shna Azla Mameila. The Gemara asks, this question takes a couple of lines to develop, and on the side of the Gemara we have a topic heading, the Nosei, which reads, Le'ezet Tzorech Kosfater Ubier. Why did the Torah have to use the word ubier? It's an ubier b'steachi. Why bother writing that at all? Me'achar de'veshilach mashma regel u'mashma gam shein. Just like, or since the word veshilach, just like we suggested, could refer to regel and could also refer to shein. In other words, the Torah is, the nature of the Torah is that there are no extra words, and not even any extra letters. So in the interest of terseness, of being concise, couldn't the Torah have used just one word, Vashilach, and communicated to us damage through trampling and eating? The Gemara will explain how we see that in the word Vashilach. Why the necessity of writing ubier, the Gemara. Let's now learn in the Gemara. V'lichtei rachmona v'shilach, v'lo boy ubier. Let the Torah just write v'shilach es biro, and thereby avoid the need for writing ubier. Why? The mashma regul, mashma shein. The word v'shilach implies both Regel and Shein. Mashma Regel Lutiv Mishalche Regel Asher V'chamor. That pasuk we saw already. Umashma Shein, believe it or not, the word Vashilach implies tooth as well. Tichtiv Vashein Behemos Ashalach Bum. Notice with our markings, the dashed underlining and the squiggle underlining, just put the two together. You have Vashein together with Ashalach. There you go. One word, Vashilach, would have obligated the owner of a damaging animal, whether it damages through trampling or damages through eating. Why add ubi'er? The Gemara answers, Ilav kro yasera, if not for what we call the extra posuk, the ubi'er reference, have amina, oh ha, oi ha, I would have thought it's either this or that, but not both. Oh, Regel, maybe the Torah is obligating only for Regel damage. Why does Eko Motsu? It's common. Oh, Shein, Maybe the Torah is obligating for shame because there the animal gets pleasure from the damage it wreaks. The Gemara says, really? You would have thought one or the other? I wouldn't have thought that. Michti shkulin hein. They're equal, they're balanced. V'yavo shnehem. I would derive both from v'shilach deheminai mafkis. Which one are you going to choose not to derive? What do I need ubir for? You can't. You wouldn't be able to choose one over the other. Since you can't choose one over the other, derive both. It's derich. No, I need ubir. Salka daita chamina. I would have thought, hani mili, hechi d'sholach shluchi, had I written just v'shilach, I would have thought obligation arises only where the owner sends the animal in, whether it tramples or eats, but only as a result of the animal being stin. Avolaz l'mameilalo, but an animal that goes on its own and either tramples or eats, there's no obligation. Komash malon, therefore I have the word ubier. That extra word tells me that whether it went in on its own, or was, or I should say, even if it went in on its own, whether it trampled or ate, the owner is obligated. Rashi, a few lines up from here, says, "Kamash malo bier, v'keva de nafkalon shein de memela mi ubier." Since we learn damage through eating on where it's memela on its own from the word ubier, asya regel v'yalfa minei. I'll learn regel on its own from that. So I need ubier to clue me in to damage that happens as a result of animal going on its own. Up till this point, we've introduced the sources in the Torah for regel and shein. What about the toldos? Tolda de shein mahi. What's a tolda of shein? Nischachcha bekoisel anosa, an animal. Remember, we said shein is a nezek, is a damage where the animal gets pleasure. Well, other forms of pleasure that are achieved while damaging is this: the animal rubs along a wall, nischachcha bekoisel anosa, for its own pleasure. Maybe the animal has some scratch on its back, some itch on its back, and it rubs into a wall and ends up knocking the wall over, or v'tinfa peres lanasa, or it dirties someone's fruits while deriving its own pleasure. Rashi says some animals have a tendency to roll around on things and maybe to cool off. So it rolls around on someone's pile of fruits, squashing all the fruits. Those are toldos of shein. Maishna shein dieshanola zekai umamoin chashmos alecha. What's unique about shein in that it is something where the animal has pleasure, and it's your momon, it's your animal, and you have to supervise it, shmos alecha. Haninami, the same can be said about these two toldos. The same thing, yeshanola zekon umamoin chashmos alecha. So the toldos of shein, elo toldos of shein kishein. V'chikomer of papa, atolda the regel. Now, as we said in our opening remarks, this discussion continues clear down a good part of Gimel Amud Beis. Mitzvah Shem, in our next year, we'll simply pick up from this point, without much by way of introduction, our hope being that you'll be able to pick up with this whole trend of thought, but in the context of the Daf Yomi, so we'll pause here, Amir Tzashem, hoping that the resumption will be without too much difficulty. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.